Pathway to Promise podcast, episode number 34, No More Sleepwalking Through Life, with the author of The Three Rooms, Kevin Murphy.
Hey, this is Joel Kamm, author of The Fun Formula, all about revolutionizing your life with fun. Dr. Brad's here for you to find your promised life of peace, prosperity, and purpose right here on the Pathway to Promise podcast.
Experience of life is not based on what we do for a living or what we have. It's based on what we think. And our thoughts can only be in one of three places. They can be in the past or the past room. They can be in the future room. Or they can be in the present or the present room.
You're on the Pathway to Promise with Dr. Brad Miller. Brad believes every person has a God-given promised life of peace, prosperity, and purpose, and that you must have a plan and a guide to get there. The Pathway to Promise podcast not only is your guide through the wilderness of depression and disappointment that stand between you and your promised life, but also brings you insights and direction from inspiring, successful thought leaders who have transformed their lives. Welcome to the Pathway to Promise. Now, here's Brad.
Hello, my good friend, and welcome to Pathway to Promise with Dr. Brad Miller. I am just privileged that you took some time out of your life to plug in those earbuds or have me on the car podcast system. Whatever you're doing today, let's just spend some time together thinking and talking about things that matter. Here on the Pathway to Promise podcast, we are all about helping you achieve and come to realize fulfillment in your life, and that you have a God-given promised life of peace, prosperity, and purpose, and that you can find your way there. You can find a pathway there through teaching and through understanding of things bigger than yourself. That's why we're here, to dig deeper in those things that give fulfillment and overcome things, I call them the five D's, death, depression, divorce, disease, and debt. And we give you some teaching and training to help you with that. We're bringing some great guests to help you to understand and overcome adversity in your life to achieve success in your life. And certainly have one of those folks with us today, the author Kevin Murphy. His first book, The Three Rooms, is all about changing your thoughts so you can change your life. We'll get into that in just a couple of minutes here. Let's talk for you and me for a second about changing your life by changing your thoughts. You know, in the Bible, it says this. It says, whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is admirable, if anything is excellent or praiseworthy, think about such things. If you want to look it up, it's Philippians 4, verse 8. The last few words of that are, think about such things. I just want to invite you, we hear talk these days about mindfulness. And one of the reasons we hear about things like mindfulness is because it is true that if we change our thoughts, change our mind, it will transform our life. And I just want to invite you to just take one area of your life right now and change your thinking. If you've got stinking thinking, as has been said, then you can change it to something that's productive. And let's talk for a minute about generous thinking over selfish thinking. Generous thinking has to do with thinking of others and the benefit of the greater good, and selfish thinking is just like it says, self-centered. It's all about us. The other day, in fact, it was just yesterday, I went and got my car washed. No big deal, really. It was one of these car washes where they vacuum the inside of your car for you. And as I'm waiting for my car to get washed, a young man comes up to me, and he hands me $6 in cash. He says, sir, you left this under the dashboard, and I just had to bring it. You left this under the front seat, and I just had to bring it to you. And you know, I know a guy working at a car wash is probably making minimum wage. And it's probably a temptation. $6 is not a whole lot, but certainly would be a healthy tip, wouldn't it? And so he did. He came to me, and I said, thank you, young man, appreciate it. And he said, well, my Christian beliefs wouldn't let me do otherwise. Whatever it is, friends, that made him do that, he came through in a generous way to give me and did the right thing by giving me back my $6. I'll tell you what I did about that here in just a minute. But in terms of generous thinking, that means giving to others. So I'll give you six things to think about why you need to be thinking generously. One is that it is personally fulfilling. It will make you feel good to do it. It just will. If you make a contribution to the kettle of the Salvation Army during the Christmas time for the Salvation Army, it makes you feel good. Every year we hear about people who drop in gold coins or stocks and bonds in those buckets. That's helpful to them. I personally know a person who is a Salvation Army captain, which is one of their leaders in the Salvation Army in Times Square in New York City. He said that was every year they had some people drop in gold coins, Krugerrands, in order to be in their buckets there. Number two, helping others helps them improve their lives, which helps the greater good. You're helping someone else to improve and to get better. That's a good thing. Third thing, generous thinking manifests itself in other attitudes in our life, which are translatable to other people. Things like love and joy and patience and discipline. And you know what we read a while ago, that whatever is lovely and noble and true and admirable and praiseworthy, those are the type of things. Those are good things, right? Good things to have that you want to have. Number four, when you contribute, when you have generous thinking, you are contributing yourself to the greater good. That is, you're part of something bigger than yourself. You know, you've heard maybe the whole thing about pay it forward. You give something good and someone else gives good to something else. Number five, it gives value to your life. No, you can't really think that your life is meaningless if you have something to contribute to someone else. And if you think that way, initially, it's just going to help you be more, to have value in your life. And that's fulfilling. More than feeling good, it is of value. Number six, and this is maybe the most important one, is that it's contagious. Generous thinking is contagious. How it was contagious for me is when that young man gave me that $6 that came from underneath my passenger seat at the car wash, I was generous with my tip to the car wash. Pass it on. Give to others. That's what we're here about at the Pathway to Promise podcast, my friends. It's about doing good stuff, helping you dig deeper in life, in your life, and to get to find your promised life of peace, prosperity, and purpose. We do, if you like what you hear, we have lots of great guests on our podcast. You can go over to pathwaypromise.com and listen to a lot of great people who can help you gain more insight into your life. That's what we're here to do, teaching and things about things that can be speaking to your life. And so pathwaypromise.com is where you can go. There also is a free gift for you there. It's an excerpt from my upcoming book, The Promise Given Life, Your 40-Day Way to Your Promised Life of Peace, Prosperity, and Purpose. You can pick that up there. And then if you like what you hear here on the Pathway to Promise podcast, please, we invite you to go to iTunes and there subscribe to the podcast. Give us a rating, 5 stars. We would love that. But a rating of what you seem as fit in a review, write a line or two. That helps others find us. Today, we have an interview with a gentleman by the name of Kevin Murphy. Kevin Murphy is a first-time author, but he is a person who is well-versed in a life of generosity, and a life where he has chosen to change his life. He's a former Wall Street managing director, and he's worked in Citigroup and some other places with sales and marketing, very successful in business. And he's also a wrestling champion and a wrestling coach, and a speaker and a coach, and he has been serving in many areas in life. And this book is called The Three Rooms: Change Your Thoughts and Change Your Life. It's all about how we need to be waking up from our sleepwalking in our lives and to pay attention. I just invite you now to pay attention carefully, because there are some gems. There are some real gems in this book, The Three Rooms, from this first-time author, Kevin Murphy. Listen to what the actual three rooms are as we have a conversation with Kevin Murphy right now. Dr. Brad Miller back with you on the Pathway to Promise podcast, and it is really an honor today to have an author with us. Kevin Murphy is an interesting fellow in many ways. He comes from a corporate background, working for Citigroup for many years and having great success there, including working with the United States government and global markets and securities and exchanges, several things in that area. He's also in the world of athletics, a wrestling champion and a speaker and a coach and a Hall of Famer in the world of wrestling, National Wrestling Hall of Fame member. And he's also involved with matters of advocacy for nonprofits for in the world of wrestling, but also helping with awareness of opioid and drug epidemics that's sweeping our country. But here's what I'm interested in, what Kevin and I are going to talk about today. It is obvious that he is an observer of the human condition, and he notices things like the relationship between happiness and unhappiness, and how, and that's a result of this inner life thing that we got going on here that we talk about so much in the Pathway to Promise. And we'll unpack a lot of that as we talk about his book, The Three Rooms. Kevin Murphy, welcome to the Pathway to Promise podcast.
Thank you, Brad. Thank you for having me on.
It is an honor and a privilege, and especially to have a first-time author of a really a fine book. I've read through most of it the last day or so, and just some really insightful things about the human condition and about how we can really choose a life of meaningfulness if we choose to change our thinking. And that's what you're all about. But tell me, I'd like to hear your story, but let me tell you about your thinking. How did your thoughts get turned around to you come to want to even want to write this book in the first place? I want to hear a little bit about your background.
Sure. Well, I spent 33 years with one firm on Wall Street, and it was really six different firms that merged together. And through each of those mergers, you learn a lot about yourself as well as other people's behaviors, especially during times of adversity. And, we all have to deal with our own levels of adversity, both at work and at home. And I was no different. And so ultimately, I started to look within for answers because, I certainly wasn't getting, the right answers from other people. And ultimately, I just kept getting a premonition that I was going to write a book. I just didn't know what it was going to be about. And I kept open the possibility that it could be about something meaningful. And, when the idea first came to me, ironically, it was in the form of three doors. They were labeled the past and the present and the future. And so that's what I thought the name of the book would be. But, eventually the three doors became the three rooms as I kept describing the place where our thoughts go behind the doors.
Yeah, it's an interesting metaphor. And, of course, you have to expand the metaphor out a little bit. All these three rooms are under one roof, so to speak, our life. And so we have to choose how we're going to manage those. We'll get into those a little bit here, but this is about how you manage your thinking and how you talk about these three rooms. And what are some actions that you think people can take, at least to have an awareness initially of the various aspects of these three rooms? And can you kind of define the three rooms for us?
Sure. Well, the three rooms, it's, in the premise, of the book is that our experience of life is not based on what we do for a living or what we have. It's based on what we think. And our thoughts can only be in one of three places. They can be in the past or the past room. They can be in the future or the future room, or they can be in the present or the present room. And whichever room your thoughts are in that moment determines your experience of life. Because, of course, our thoughts can go back and forth. And so the key is to be aware of which room your thoughts are in. And in order to do that, you have to observe your thoughts. And it's that act of observation that separates our awareness from our thoughts. And that awareness is what all the mystics have always talked about. That's that divine consciousness, that Christ consciousness, or that Buddha consciousness, or however you want to explain it. But that's, that's the place, that we really want to be connected to.
That word consciousness is really key here, because so many people choose to, when adversity hits or life happens, choose to try to ignore it or push it down or to be find some other means to numb the pain, sometimes, chemically or through some other unhealthy habits. But what you're saying is this consciousness, this awareness is a key to having some happiness and fulfillment here and being aware of what this is all about instead of being pushing it away.
Absolutely. And the key to the book, is all about identifying, where your thoughts are. And we see more and more literature today just, talking about the benefits of a consciousness-minded lifestyle or, a spiritual lifestyle. And, we constantly hear things about mindfulness and living in the present or being in the now. And they all pertain to the conscious awareness of our thoughts. So more and more people understand how important it is to monitor our thoughts. But, unfortunately, Brad, we just don't do a very good job at it. And I think if you want to get better at it, you need to ask yourself a simple question, like, where am I? Or in other words, like, where are my thoughts? Or even better yet, which room are my thoughts in?
Yeah.
Because anyone can tell you on the where you are on the outside, but only you can answer where you are on the inside.
You find sometimes people sometimes have to have a jolt to the system in order to wake them up from where they're at to help them deal with that question of where am I at, or can people take some bold actions on their own accord in order to become more aware? Like I'm talking about, sometimes people have a major health issue, for instance, that wakes them up.
Yeah, and I think being aware, and like I said, just constantly asking yourself, where am I, and that's something you can do all during the day. And so instead of just a meditation in the morning, you can extend that, because sometimes people do like to meditate and say prayers in the morning, and they go out into the world and all the things that they see and hear and experiences of life, pulls you in different directions and causes different emotions. So it's able to look at being able to be aware of what we're thinking, and thoughts that make us not feel good, that brings us, that can help bring us back into the center much more quickly. But
do you advocate any kind of way to help that to happen? Any personal disciplines or accountability partners or anything along this line that can help us be more aware of where we're at?
Well, I think one of the biggest things in the boldest actions that people can take in order to, implement, changes right away in their life is to find a cause that you believe in and really get involved. Because like you said, a lot of people have, dealt with trauma and other, significant challenges. And, when we come, across adversity in those times, either we can succumb to them and focus on the challenge and focus on the past and the negative emotions that you've experienced. And that's what I call getting caught in the past room and constantly going back there, constantly thinking about it and constantly feeling those negative emotions. And that leads to things like blame. And, I'm pointing out, and it's always somebody else's fault, or, you become the victim. And it's understandable why people would want to blame other people for certain things or feeling like the victim. But starting to get involved with causes and things that even have affected you personally starts to empower you to make changes going forward. And not only just, in your own life, because of you can take that. And we've seen examples of that where people have experienced real, either tragedies or real challenges in their lives, and they've turned around and they've been spokespeople and inspirations to other people of how to overcome it. And that's the message. That's really where we want to be, because they're letting go of their, the past. It's not like they just totally forget of, what happened, but they're taking what happened and it's their perception of that, instead of that, okay, this is what happened and now I'm a victim, is their perception is this is what happened. I've experienced this, and now this is what I want to do with this going forward. I want to help people. I want to be, help be the influencer of change.
Yeah. How about for you personally, Kevin? I just got a feeling there was some life event or some issue that came into your life that you had to overcome, some adversity that you had to deal with. I'd just like to hear a bit of your story about whatever was kind of an incentive here for you in writing this book, if there was some particular episode or issue that that maybe helped you to process this way.
Well, I think, I did have a personal experience of adversity and which probably was, one of the biggest, influences for the book. And, one day I was working, in corporate America and married with two kids and, loving my life. And it seemed like the next day, all of a sudden we were going through a merger and I was living in a little basement apartment, without my kids. And you start to say, how did this happen? And, why am I here? And, for me, I literally stood up in my bed one night and I had it out with God. I screamed at him. I cursed at him and said, why am I here? Why can't I see my kids every day? I'm a good person. I didn't do anything wrong. This isn't right. And then I started screaming, what else do you got? I can take it. Give it to me. And I think sometimes that total, release of all of these negative emotions and taking it out on the one, power or source that can handle it, that all of a sudden it caused this incredible calm within me. And that's why I was talking about earlier, when you deal with adversity, you can't always find all the answers out with other people, talking with other people. You have to truly look within. Mm-hmm. And, that started this whole, path of me constantly devouring everything I could about religion, spirituality, and really trying to connect with my higher power and my own soul.
Yeah, that's an incredible story, because in many ways, what you're describing, from some people's perspective, you would have been in a pretty good place, meaning you were having some success in corporate America and some things along that line, and yet there was a level of discontentment that caused you to be, have it out, stand in your bed and yell and scream, and to force you to come to terms with what is really truly important in your life, and it is in that inner life. And I just think outward appearances are sometimes deceiving. We can have that inner turmoil going on of meaningfulness and meaninglessness that's going on, and that's awesome that you shared that. Thank you. I know that takes some vulnerability to share that. I really thank you for doing that. But see, like what you described there is a little bit of that. You were trying to deal with some of that stuff in the what you describe as the past room. Would you say that's fair when you were talking about your experience there?
Yeah, because I was holding on to things. I was bitter. I was resentful. I was holding on to these negative emotions every time I thought of not being able to see my kids every day, and just, it starts to build. The more and more you build, and I call it getting, stuck in the past room. And, and unless you do something to come back, to come back into the present, come back into the present room and realign, with your higher power, then it's just going to continue to lead negative emotions. And we all know people who, have just been, seemed angry for years. And they hold on to grudges and they don't let things go. And
they get stuck. They get stuck in whatever bitterness and regret and all that painful stuff, from your past. And if you choose to, you can just stay in the land of bitterness. But you
exactly.
But one of the things I find interesting about what you share in your book and is that some people, and a lot of folks, I think, especially folks who really get into self-help type of literature and so on, and that's all very well and good. But a lot of it focuses on the future, major goal setting and so on, and that's all good stuff. And did you share about what you call the future room is not always all it's cracked up to be, in the sense of it's not always about those futuristic things, that there is some things to be wary of there. Would you share a little bit about how there are some things about the future room that are not exactly where we want to be?
Sure. And when I talk about the future room, it's once again, looking to the future and about what can happen, and usually from a worst case scenario or, you know, looking at what's, you know, what's not going to happen and having it cause negative emotions. And if you look at, you know, long-term chronic illness, you know, in society today, it's one of the major causes is stress. And, you know, if you've never had an anxiety attack, you know, it's, you can't appreciate how physically debilitating it can be. And really it's from looking at what is, looking at your life as it is right now. And then if your desires have not yet, you know, come to fruition or manifested yet, then, you know, you can, you look to the future and you focus on, you know, what isn't happening and what you don't have. And those thoughts can prevent your desires from coming. And so you really can't look at what, you know, what is and project that into the future of what isn't or what you don't have. Really, and of course, we need to look to the future and plan for the future. But
You're talking something a little bit different than planning. You're talking about some of that emotional kind of the what ifs, if our what ifs kind of go up in a really spiraling downhill place.
Exactly. And so in the present room, you think of your desires, and instead of focusing on what isn't, you imagine what can be, and then focus on the feeling of your desires already coming true. That's the same thing that Christ talked about, and the same thing that all, you know, the mystics have always, you know, said. And so, you know, when we focus on what can be instead of, you know, what can't be or what isn't, then we can start to attract into our lives, you know, all the things that, you know, will, you know, help us achieve those desires.
And when we start to attract those things, that's what you call the present room. That's the places of peace, of joy. That's what we want to be. Is that right?
Absolutely. And I think that's really where most important, that's where we come in alignment with our higher power, or, you know, with our soul and with that whole divine consciousness. Because even when you think about, you know, go back to the past room for a second and feeling negative emotions or being angry at someone that you can't let go, those negative emotions of anger or resentment are letting you know that you are looking back into the past and you are simply not viewing it or perceiving it the same way as your own higher self. Because your own higher self or that divine consciousness, it's not condemning that person. It's not blaming that person. It's not judging that person. You're doing that. You can call it your ego, whatever you want to say it, but it's the separation from your own higher self. And so when you're in the present room, that's when you realign, you know, with Source, with our Father. And that's when those feelings of love and appreciation and joy all start to come out. And, you know, we can imagine, that's why from the present room, we can imagine a future, and it's okay to plan for the future, you know, but we do it in the present. We do it right now. And we imagine what can be, and we feel good about it, the joy, well, what it would be like, you know, if I accomplish this, and feel that and hold on to that. And now you're not pushing that desire away. You're attracting it closer. But as soon as you say, I'm never going to be able to do that, then I can't do that, I'm not this, then you start to push it away. And so it really is, that's how your thoughts can really affect your emotions and how you feel.
And part of what we're talking about here, of course, when you do achieve that place of alignment with your higher power, with God, and that you have that present room, as you call it, that is the place where there is a true sense of purpose and meaningfulness, and that's what we all achieve and strive for. And yet we know it's not the reality for a lot of folks. And I want you to speak now a little bit, if you don't mind, Kevin, to some of these folks who may be listening who are kind of stuck in that past room or stuck in that future room, or might the term you use in your book is sleepwalking through life. Help us process some actual disciplines or actual processes that you advocate that can help people move to that present room.
Sure. I think, you know, I have a little saying, you know, one word by day and two words by night. And if you want some, you know, actual steps and or discipline actions that you can do, I mean, just, you know, changing one word during the day can make so much different. And it has to do with our thoughts. And when you think of your thoughts, you have to think of the two words, I am, you know, which is that's our awareness of being, right? So whatever we put after I am or whatever we include in that, that's who we believe we are. And so too often in the past room and in the future room, we keep adding the word not. And we get it from a lot of, you know, let's say either well-meaning folks or not so well-meaning folks. Oh, you're not good enough for that, or you're never going to be able to do that. So we start to define ourselves as I am not good enough for that. You know, I'm not going to be able to do that. And we keep saying I am not. And that thought produces negative emotions. No matter what it is, whether it's looking in the past or looking in the future, you know, it's, I'm just not going to be able to do something. And it's just, it's, you know, when you start to get down all the way down to the things of the, you know, the shame at the bottom of the emotional scale, you know, the places where we don't want to be. But if you substitute not with one word, so instead of I am not, you take the word already, as in I already am, then you're changing everything. Even within yourself, you can feel it when you start thinking, oh, well, I already am. Meaning, let's say your desire is to be healthy or to be wealthy, you know, then you can say, well, I'm not healthy now. I have this, you know, I've been diagnosed with this and I'm not wealthy and I'm not going to be able to. You keep projecting that into the future. But if you start to come from the point of I already am healthy, I already am wealthy, and you imagine what it would be like to be healthy and to be wealthy, and you feel that. Now you've changed everything. That thought of I already am instead of I am not changes your emotions. And if we change our emotions from negative emotions to positive emotions, already we have changed our experience of life before anything else in the physical world changed. We can wake up in the same day and feel much better simply by the thoughts of I already am, and you start to act and feel that way. And it sounds crazy. Well, you know, well, if nothing really changed, how can you change your thoughts? But the key is we have to change our thoughts before we see the physical changes in our life. Because if we wait for the physical changes in order to make us feel better, we're never going to feel better.
Doesn't work that way, does it? Just doesn't work that way.
Yeah.
Exactly. Well, and also what you're sharing there, when you say, I am already, that's a present tense use of language. It's our saying, it has happened. It is now. And that makes a world of difference. And I'm thinking about now in your book where you kind of talk about the difference in your chapter about a movie, about watching a movie or being in a movie, and how there is a difference between observing something and participating in something that I see there. I love this quote. I want to share it with you from your own book here, that you talk about watching a drama versus living a drama, and about how a movie, we have a willing suspension of disbelief. We accept that is not real. Well, in real life, we need a willing suspension of false belief, a suspension of believing in all the untrue things we've been taught, like resentment, greed, and revenge. That's a great, great quote there from your book. And just speak to that a little bit about what you're talking about here, about how life is we're in the movie. This is a real life thing, right? We are a part of this play.
You're absolutely right. Whether anybody wants to acknowledge it or not, I mean, we are all actors in the movie of our life. This is what we're in, and what's being projected on each one of our screens in the movie of our life is how we think and how we feel. That is what we project out, and that's what other people get to us. That's what we attract into our life. So depending on which room you're in, that's kind of the movie theater that, you know, that's going to be projecting your experience of life. And the other concept, the main key concept in that is the question, who's your director? And so, you know, if you're listening to the ego and you're, you know, or you're listening to everybody else saying you're not good enough for this and you better get that person back and look what, did you see what they did to you? And, you know, and so you constantly have all these thoughts, and that's those negative emotions, those thoughts creating negative emotions, that's going to what plays out in your life. And so if you want to change your life and you want to change your experience and feel better and have more positive things happen, you have to change directors in your own life's movie. And the other director is your own higher self. That's your inner teacher, your inner being, you know, that Christ consciousness that, that we all have access to. And that's the voice we need to listen to, not all the voices on the outside telling us what we should do and that we're not good enough. Listen to that inner voice, because that inner voice is always telling us you're amazing. What else do you want to do? You know, you can do anything. Together, we can do anything. And when I was talking about that thought of I am not good enough. I am not, you know, I'm not going to be able to do that. All those thoughts from the past and the future realm. The one thought from I am, that using the word I am not in the present room, should be I am not alone. I always have you with me. And that's you communicating with your own higher self. I am not alone. Yeah. And so what's next? You know, where should we go from here? You know, point it out. It doesn't mean you sit now, you sit back and do nothing. But it's like, what's next? This is my life movie. I'm here. Forget about, you know, going back, I'm not going to push the rewind button. I'm already here. Let me imagine, you know, a great script going forward, because whatever you can imagine, your higher self is writing a new script for your life movie. Mm-hmm. Great. And you want to follow that director.
That's great. And if we follow that thinking from a Christian perspective, we can think of the admonition of Christ, so I am with you always, even to the end of the age, is one way of thinking about that. Bringing that higher power, that source of power in our lives, and know that we're not in this alone, but we do have to process this on the inner life. And part of that process, I really think, something that we need to talk about here just for a second, Kevin, is about the issue of forgiveness. I don't know if we can move through these rooms from the past room, or even the future room, to the present room, without forgiving ourselves and maybe having a forgiveful nature to other people. Can you speak to the nature of forgiveness and the power of that in this whole process that you're talking about here?
Absolutely. And Brad, you hit on one of the, you know, the crux, you know, of, you know, not just Christianity, but, you know, for all spiritual paths. And if you are stuck in the past room and you just, someone did something to you and you can't let it go and you have anger, you know, in your heart, you know, clearly the most effective way of moving from the past room with those negative emotions back into the present room is through forgiveness. And unfortunately, too many of us, we have levels of forgiveness. And I can't tell you how many times I've, you know, heard people say, well, I know I'm a forgiving guy, but, you know, this time he crossed the line. And the problem is we all have a different line that we draw. And Christ didn't, you know, tell us, you know, to draw any line. You know, that's none of the spiritual masters said that's, you know, here's, you know, yes, you can forgive this, but you don't have to forgive that. Unconditional forgiveness, you know, is forgiving, you know, anything.
Yeah, there's no sense of a qualified or earned forgiveness. You know, you have to ask for forgiveness, but it's not earned.
Yeah, I have friends that I went to Catholic school in elementary school with, and some of them, they don't talk to each other after 20 years. They're still holding grudges. And I try to tell them, isn't that the crux of our whole religion about, you know, forgiving? And they just can't get over it. And from a silly event that happened 20 years ago. And if you really want to understand forgiveness, look at the stories that are out there. And there's tons of them where people have gone, you know, experienced incredible hardship and pain, and yet they have chosen to forgive someone in sometimes, you know, in incredibly you know, horrible situations, and they have forgiven, and they have found out that they have freed themselves. And forgiveness is not about letting the other person off the hook. Forgiveness is about letting you off the hook so you can go enjoy the rest of your life. And there's so many examples of those, and read about a couple of those people and say, you know, because we hear it a lot and you know, on the TV, we can hear someone say, you know, I'm never going to forgive them. I hope they rot in jail for the rest of their life. And that's understandable. But then you see something in another tragedy where the person says, you know, I have totally forgiven them, even if it meant the loss of a loved one for them. And they said, and now I can move on with my life. That's the key. Now I can move on with my life.
And that's a source of absolute peace for the person who's been wronged. If we wait, if we're the wronged party, you know, if we're the one who did not want to get the divorce but the other person did, for instance, and if we're the wronged party, and if we wait around for the other person to ask us to forgive them, something like that, that's not necessarily going to happen. We have to forgive them regardless, and that's what will bring us peace. And that's what I think you're sharing here in your book, is one of the ways to get to that present room is by extraordinary forgiveness.
Exactly.
Yeah. Let's talk about love for a second as a fuel for what all this happens here. We're talking about, you know, drawing on this higher power. But I got a sense that we want to arrive at this present room, a place of love, but loving relationships and feeling love of that higher power is important here too. Speak to how the power of loving relationships, whether it be family or friends or advocates or other neighbors or whatever, speak to how that can be an important part of moving to the present room.
Well, certainly thinking about people that you love automatically, you know, and then the emotions of, you know, of joy and contentment and appreciation that they bring can always slide us back into the present room. We always, and so loving relationships in our lives, whether it be a spouse or family or close friends or anyone, can always slide us back into the present room. But it's really important to understand that in any loving relationship, or for all of our loving relationships, it still always starts with our relationship with ourselves and with our higher power. You start there, then what you project out is so much more loving, and it brings so much more clarity and meaning to all the relationships in your life. But if you are thinking thoughts and you're not happy with yourself and you're not connected to your higher power, you may think you have a good relationship with someone else, you know, in your family or friends, but if you keep projecting things like, you know, anger and negative emotions out on people because that's kind of what you're feeling and picking up, you're really not helping that relationship. So it starts with, you know, that one relationship with your higher self. And, you know, there's a concept that I have which gives a really good example of this, is called the internal mirror. You know, and we all look in the mirror and we see our reflection, and then we can see our, you know, imperfections, and, you know, we can try to change them and maybe, you know, lose some weight, or I'll cut my hair, and we're always worried about our appearances. But what if you can look into a mirror and see reflected back to you what you are like on the inside? Because all mirrors reflect back to what you're like on the outside. But what if you can look in and now you can see, you know, exactly how you are on the inside. Now, would you see love and peace and compassion? Or would you see bitterness or anger or resentment? And that's what you feel, that's being reflected back to you. So if you look in a mirror and you think of it as an internal mirror, ask yourself what's being reflected back to you. How do you feel? And that's really where you have to start. And if you're feeling love and appreciation and gratitude, think of how amazing now your, quote, loving relationships are going to be. They're going to be so much more powerful. But if you're looking in that internal mirror and you're feeling back bitterness or resentment, or, you know, blaming others, now you leave that mirror. How are those loving relationships going to be? they're not going to be as loving as you think they are. So let's start looking within, aligning with our higher power, and also getting to the point where we can look in an internal mirror and like what we are getting reflected back.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Because that really, what it boils down to, this self-awareness we started our conversation about has to do with awareness that, you know, we have to have this understanding of that power of a loving God in our lives. That's what I like to share, that spiritual force. And in loving ourselves, that is the source of everything, all the other good stuff that happens. We've got to start there. And some of these disciplines you've been sharing with us are so helpful. I know you've have some other things about meditation practices and mantras and mental stickers that you've talked about in your book and that are helpful too. What I'm getting at is I just think we need a process. We need these disciplines to help us do these things. And there's some good tips in your book about that. I thank you for those.
Thank you very much. I appreciate
that. Anything, the theme of what we're about here on the Pathway to Promise is helping folks to process their life in such a way to find their, what we call the promised life of peace, prosperity, and purpose in life. So I always like to ask almost all my guests these three questions, and we've touched on it quite a bit already, but just simply for you, Kevin, what brings you peace?
Well, what brings me peace is that connection with my higher self. And, you know, I think of it as, you know, in the present room, and it's about communicating with your higher self. It's not thinking it's there or wondering if it's there. It's actually having that communication. So when I say, you know, where am I? You know, I just, you know, through the day and, you know, something, if I'm not feeling great, I'm always talking about how do I feel. If I say, where am I? Oh, yeah, I'm right here with you. And that's what I'll literally say. I'm right here with you. And I'm talking to my own higher self. And that brings that feeling of connection. Once again, like I'm not alone. And oh, yeah, you're here. And for the movie of our life, for the movie of my life, I keep imagining my own higher self saying, watch the movie, Kevin. I'm right here with you. I'm looking through your eyes. Watch the movie, Kevin. I'm right here with you. I'm looking through your eyes. Now, all of a sudden, your perception of people, you start to see through the eyes of God, through the eyes of Christ, you know, and when you make that connection, it just changes everything you see. And that's where it was going at the beginning. It's, we can either let everything we see and hear affect how we feel, or we can let how we feel and that connection affect how everything we see and hear.
No, that's awesome. So, Kevin, how would you define prosperity?
I would define prosperity as being totally immersed in joy. We hear all different things about success and people striving for success. And what is success? I mean, everybody has a different view of success. And the same thing with prosperity. Prosperity, it's not about the things that we can't take with us when we leave this physical plane. It's not about the amount of accumulations that we get. You know, prosperity is about all the things we hold in our heart and all the love and compassion and those feelings. That's what we're here to experience, because, you know, I truly believe that we are eternal beings that have, you know, manifested in these bodies in order to experience ourselves. And if we're an eternal being connected to, you know, our source and our Father, then what is that? That's pure love. And that's who we are. So we're here to experience pure love. And that's prosperity to me. Total prosperity is that feeling as much as possible, holding on to that, feeling that feeling of powerful feeling of love.
Awesome. Then just one more question. What's your purpose right now?
You know, my purpose is, one is to help other people. But I'd say that, you know, to go back to, not to sound selfish, but I believe, you know, my number one purpose is to stay in alignment with my own higher self, and then I can help other people.
Sure.
You know, and I do it through other things. I mean, I have, you know, addiction in my family, and so helping, you know, different campaigns to raise awareness for addiction and things like that by helping other people, by raising awareness, I feel good about what I'm doing. And so, in a sense, I'm helping myself by helping others.
Awesome stuff. Awesome stuff. Thank you, Kevin. Well, Kevin, what are you working on right now, and how can people be in connection to you with your book, The Three Rooms?
Well, you know, the Three Rooms is just, it's my first book. It was just published, you know, last month. So, it's available on Amazon, and there's a website, www.thethreerooms.com. And I think there may be some other books, you know, in store down the road as more and more of this just, you know, allow things to unfold. And I'll keep working on like I said, different campaigns for to raise awareness for this this opioid and heroin epidemic that's sweeping the country. And, you know, we have something called Wrestling Takes Down Drugs to raise awareness for that. And that's www.wrestlingtakesdowndrugs.org. So there's just a couple of initiatives I'm working on.
Well, glad to hear that. We'll put connections to those in our show notes. And Kevin, I just want to thank you for being with us today and on the Pathway to Promise podcast. Kevin Murphy, the author of The Three Rooms. Change your thoughts, change your life. The Three Rooms. A book by Kevin Murphy. I commend it to you. I've read it, and I think there is some real value in understanding what Kevin is talking about when he talks about you not sleepwalking through your life, but paying attention, being cognizant of where you're at in your life. You need to cut the three rooms, right? Your past room, your future room, and your present room. And it's all about some points that I want to just help you have some takeaway points from this book here and from our conversation with Kevin. And so let's talk about them right now. That past room is that room where you have all the junk that's happened to you. And we often tend to kind of get stuck there in our past memories, which are not always helpful. We think then about the consequences, the regrets, the things that we have. Then he talks about also the future room, the place that we think about sometimes. Too often, we think about the future in terms of dread, or we think that it's going to be something that is what's not going to happen to us, about things that are, because we don't have the confidence to think about what the possibilities are, we oftentimes think about the possibilities, about the consequences that are happening in our life and what can have happening in our life. And that's not always helpful either, because that can lead us in a downward spiral as well. And there's it's anxiety, it's stress, it's all those type of things. What Kevin advocates here, and I just want to give this to you again, because he said it, is just have the self-awareness to ask yourself the conscious question on a regular basis, where am I? Where am I? And to answer that question by trying to move ourselves from either a past life of regret or a future life of anxiety to a present life of joy and fulfillment. He had his own experiences with that. You caught on that. We found himself living in a basement apartment without his kids. He lashed out to God. He felt depressed and so on. Even though he had other good things going in his life, he knew that he had to look within. And that's what I invite you to do. Look for within and to transform those negative emotions, the stress and the anxiety and the difficulties that you can, and focus not on what isn't, but to think of what can be, that can be when you have that alignment with your greater power, with God. And that's the place of peace and joy and fulfillment. That's the present room in Kevin's thinking and his writing here. It's about understanding that your desires and everything in your life can be there if you focus on the present instead of what isn't or hasn't happened in the past, or what might happen bad in the future. Instead, focus on what is right now and what can be in a good way. So one of the ways he talks about doing that is by simply changing one word. And it's one word. Changing one word can make a difference. Instead of using the phrase, I am not thinking about our day or about our life. You know, I'm not worthy. I'm not good enough. I'm not talented enough. I'm not pretty enough. I'm not a good enough singer. I'm not skinny. I'm not fat enough. Whatever it is, would be. Instead of thinking what you're not, change that one word from not to I am already. I am already fulfilled in my life. I am already physically fit. I am already financially secure. I am already in a great marriage. I am already leaving a great legacy for my kids. And he talked about being the senior life kind of as a movie, but being the director of your own movie, taking some charge there in that. And a part of that direction, you can change your life by finding a cause, a worthy cause. And this could be one of the quickest ways to change your thinking. Find a cause worthy of adding value to the world and to commit to that, to be a contributor to life. So these are also important things. And another concept I want you to get here today from Kevin's book is the concept of forgiveness. That one of the most crucial paths to that present room is to forgive yourself of your past and to forgive others who have hurt you. And that is the kind of thing that lets you move on in your life and to live a life not of bitterness or resentment, but of love and gratitude in alignment with your own self. And he lives that out, Kevin does, in this book here. He's also involved with the greater good. For instance, in the world of wrestling, he's with a group called Take Down Drugs, which has to do with abuse of substances and so on. So I commend the book to you. We'll put the links to it in our show notes at pathwaypromise.com. That's where you can find all kinds of good stuff about how to move your life and overcome adversity to succeed and to find your pathway to your promised life of peace, prosperity, and purpose. And that's what we're here to do. That's my role and that's my position as a doctor of ministry where it's all about my doctorate was in life transformation. And so that's what jazzes me up is seeing lives changed. So if you like what you hear, go over to pathwaypromise.com. We also have an excerpt of my upcoming book, The Promise Given Life, Your 40-Day Way to Peace, Prosperity, and Purpose. You can pick that up there as well as a free download. And then if you will, go on over then to iTunes to subscribe to our podcast and to give us a rating and a review. And we would certainly appreciate that and invite you to share in your network, both personally and online, about pathwaypromise.com with Dr. Brad Miller. We look forward to being with you again real soon with another great guest and more teaching about how you can overcome adversity in your life to achieve your promised life of peace, prosperity, and purpose. So until next time, this is Dr. Brad Miller inviting you to keep your promises, because there's power in a promise kept.
Thanks so much for taking the Pathway to Promise with Dr. Brad Miller. As a subscriber, you'll be a vital part of the Pathway to Promise community. Visit us on the web at pathwaypromise.com. Until next time, remember to stay on your Pathway to Promise.